This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. On the theory that now, with Labor Day behind us and the midterms in front of us, the news is going to start picking up again, getting busy. First of all, were people even paying attention in August? But also, because sometimes it's good to just stop and reflect when you know there is a busier stretch coming, we're going to start today with a look back. A look back at the thing that affects this economy to this very day, the financial crisis and the recession that followed. I was out in Minnesota the other day to talk to Neel Kashkari, now the president of the Minneapolis Fed. But 10 years ago, as we were heading into the worst of the crisis, Lehman Brothers and AIG and all of that, he was the person handling what would become the TARP, the bank bailout for Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson. Anyway, we got to his office. We chit-chatted for a little bit, got the backstory on a couple of pictures from the George W. Bush White House that he has on his bookshelves, and then we got right to it.
So this is a tricky way to start this interview, but you're a guy who came out of Goldman Sachs. You're from PIMCO. You had your stint in the Treasury. And I'm wondering, when the New York Times runs your obit in 50 years, first sentence is going to be, Neel Kashkari, who led the biggest bailout of banks in American history, died today at the age of 94. You all right with that? I mean, you're a free market guy from way back, and that's your legacy, the TARP and the bailout.
Well, I'm absolutely proud of what we did during the financial crisis. And we were, as you indicated, we were a free market Republican administration that hated the idea of intervening in markets. But it became apparent that we were facing a 1-in-100-year economic crisis, and we needed to stabilize the economy. And so although we hated that it got to that point, I'm proud of the actions that we took. I'm proud of the people that I worked with, and I would not turn my back on that experience in any way. I own it. I embrace it. I'm proud of it.
I was actually going to ask this later in the interview, but since you were so forthright in that, I'm going to go with it now. You arguably are the guy whose life was changed the most by that incident, right? Bernanke and Paulson and Geithner, you know, they were at the tops of their careers, and they've moved on. They've done other things. Bush and Obama, we know what happened to them. This literally was a life-changing event for you.
It was a life-changing event for me in terms of my career, but it was a much more dramatic life-changing event for millions of Americans who lost their homes, right? People who lost their jobs. The reason this crisis was so unfair is a lot of people were responsible, bought homes they could afford. Then when the financial crisis turned into the Great Recession and then they lost their jobs, then they lost their homes, it was much more traumatic for them than it was for me.
I want you to start in the spring-ish of 2008. You had called Hank Paulson a couple of years earlier and said, hey, I want to come work at Treasury. And he said, come on down. I want to get things done as Paulson is wont to do. And then things start going south, and he says to you, Neel, I need some help with this. What was the first introduction you had to how bad things were going and the role you were going to play?
It was a slow process. It was summer of 07 when he said, I want you to be in charge of housing for Treasury. And I said, Hank, I don't know anything about housing. But he said, nobody else in Treasury knows anything about housing either. So figure it out. Work with our best economists. Work with people at HUD and the White House. Figure out what's going on in housing and what, if anything, we should do about it. And again, our bias was not to intervene. Our bias was let the markets run their course. That's the way markets are supposed to work. And as we got deeper into it and as time went on, it became more and more and more serious. And I remember it was January of 2008 when there was a phone call that Secretary Paulson and I had with the former chairman, Alan Greenspan. Mm-hmm. And in his very quiet way that Alan Greenspan speaks, I heard him say over the speakerphone, this might be a 1-in-100-year event. That set us back, and that made us think, oh my gosh, Alan Greenspan is saying this might be a 1-in-100-year event. We need to get ready for the worst.
So you guys put together something called the Break the Glass Plan.
That's right.
Which was, in essence, if everything goes to the dogs, as it were, here's what we do. What was in that first plan?
Well, so my colleague Phil Swagel, also at Treasury, and I drafted it. We went through a bunch of different options at a very high level. Everything from putting capital into banks to buying up assets from banks, a range of different options. It was 10 pages, probably 6 or 8 different ideas. No details, just concepts. Just to say, let's have an idea of what we might do if we really needed to do something dramatic. But we also knew that Congress would have to approve any of this. They would have to allocate the dollars for this. So we presented this to Chairman Bernanke and Secretary Paulson. They both said, yes, this looks reasonable.
Wait, back up. Okay. What did Henry Paulson really say the first time you said, Hank, let's talk bailouts?
Well, Hank told us to pull this together. He said, go work on what we will do if the you-know-what really hits the fan.
Right.
And the economy's on the verge of collapse. Pulled together some ideas. So it was his idea that we do this work to begin with. We showed it to him. He said, let's go show this to Bernanke. Paulson and Bernanke said, this seems reasonable, but there's no way we can go to Congress right now for this. They'll say, you're crazy. So let's just put it on the shelf and let's hope we don't need it.
Talk to me about the political environment of the time. I mean, we had a presidential election going on, right? We wound up going from a Republican to a Democrat in the worst crisis in more than a generation. Did you think, you know, Congress and the TARP vote aside, did you think that the politicians had your back?
Oh, no. No. I mean, the leaders, yes, but the rank and file politicians didn't. I mean, I was taking the brunt of it because I'd have to go testify in front of Congress many, many times. And generally speaking, the members of Congress were much more deferential and respectful to the Treasury Secretary or the Fed Chair than to some 35-year-old Assistant Secretary.
Right.
And, you know, but the members of Congress were reflecting the anger of their constituents. Their constituents were angry. Their constituents were confused, didn't understand what this crisis was and whose fault it was. And so I got to feel firsthand that anger.
When did you know it was going to be okay? I mean, you had Lehman in September. You had TARP in early October. And then what?
It was a slow burn of the big banks coming under more and more pressure. You know, I had on my at Treasury, I had a Bloomberg screen,
And
I was watching all the various tickers throughout the day. And, you know, watching the big banks, their stock prices approach zero was an indicator for me that the markets did not believe we'd done enough to stabilize the crisis. So in March of 2009, I think the financial institutions hit a minimum. And then when we got through the stress test in late April, early May of 2009, that's when I said, okay, we've turned the corner. The worst is behind us now. And people know that the U.S. government, the U.S. taxpayers, are standing behind the economy. And that was a message that we had to send.
On the theory that there's another crisis coming, hopefully not as bad as the one 10 years ago, but there's another financial recession and crisis coming. What's going to cause it? What's your guess?
It could be any number of things. It could be a spark in emerging markets like we're seeing in Turkey where there's a lot of uncertainty. That could potentially trigger a crisis of confidence and could spill over globally into the U.S. It could be the Federal Reserve. It could be that we overdo raising interest rates. I've also been saying that we're raising interest rates too aggressively. We might keep raising interest rates and the economy can't take it and we put the country into recession.
Well, you've been very public about your dissents when you're a voting member of the Federal Open Market Committee. And I don't know if Chairman Powell is actually going to listen to this interview, but his people certainly will. Why do you think the Fed keeps going?
Well, we're trying to assess, is the economy running at full potential? We want to keep it from overheating. Because if it overheats, then that can lead to runaway inflation, which is really bad for everybody.
Right.
So, but assessing, is the economy running at potential, below potential, or above potential, it's an inexact science. So I've simply been saying, I don't see any indication that we're running above potential. So let's let it keep running. And if we start to see signs that it's overheating, we can always raise rates then. So I think my colleagues and I are having an honest disagreement about this very fundamental question.
Even though unemployment's at 4-ish% and there is no inflation in this economy today, you're still leery.
I'm leery that we've been saying for years now, we're at full employment. That's it. There's no more workers. And then all these workers come off the sidelines saying, yeah, I want jobs. And this is in a modest wage growth environment. Imagine if wage growth actually picks up. Maybe a lot more workers will come in off the sidelines. The more workers that come in off the sidelines and take jobs, the better for the U.S. economy, the better for those workers, the better for all of us. So let's let that continue.
One of the things I talked about actually with Chairman Powell when I sat down with him 6 weeks or maybe 2 months ago was how hard he's working to demystify the Fed, to speak English, and you know he's changing his press conferences and all of that stuff. How much does it matter that Americans have some economic literacy just in terms of being aware of the crisis or next crisis or what's happening or just knowing what's going on?
I think it's really important. I think, first of all, his work to demystify the Fed, I think, is very positive. We need to earn people's trust so that if there is a future crisis and we have to do unconventional or confusing actions, that they give us the benefit of the doubt and that we've earned their trust. So I really support what he's doing there. And I do think so. I mean, to minimize the chances of future crises, our citizens need to understand what's happened in the past. so that they can see the signs of, hey, this could happen again. Let's be more careful going into it. And so I think the more literate, financially literate our citizens are, the better.
What happens if people don't understand? What happens if they just let the black box be the black box?
Well, that's what unfortunately was happening in leading into the last crisis. Remember, Alan Greenspan, when he was chairman, he intentionally spoke in a very mystifying way because it made himself seem smart, and it, you know, it just made everybody else scared to ask about the Fed. Well, that didn't build trust. And so in 08, when the crisis happened and we needed people to trust us, there was a big trust deficit. And that trust deficit then got deeper through the controversial actions that the Fed had to take. So the things that Chairman Powell and Janet Yellen before him are trying to do are to rebuild that trust.
To this idea of the crisis next time, and maybe it's going to be Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, maybe it's going to be his successor. Somebody's going to have to go to the Hill and say, we need this authority to wind down this bank, or we need this amount of money. If Congress doesn't get it and doesn't understand, we'll have another vote like the TARP going down. Is Congress not being willing to engage on this going to make the next crisis worse?
If it gets so bad that we absolutely need Congress's help, yes. If they refuse just because the politics of the moment do not allow them. You know, many members of Congress paid for their TARP vote with their seats. It was one of the finest moments in our democracy's political history, seeing leaders across the aisle step forward and do what's in the country's best interest, not in their own professional best interest. And then they lost their seats. And so if this were to happen again and people said, no, I want to keep my job, then the country's going to suffer for it. And that is scary. And that's why everything we can do to rebuild the trust across party lines, we need to do.
So when the next crisis happens, are we ready?
I don't know. I think the challenge is, if there were another 08-type crisis today, could we get Congress to support us the way we did in 08? I think probably not. And that means the U.S. economy, the American people, Main Street, would bear the ultimate consequences of that.
That must be terrifying. I mean, you're a guy who's kind of in charge of that.
It is terrifying. Now, the good news is we're always out there looking for signs of another big crisis brewing. We don't see signs of that. But then again, our track record is terrible in seeing signs before they actually happen. So don't take a lot of comfort from the fact that we're not seeing it right now.
Okay.
We're going to go back to that Neil Kashkari interview one last time, because there is another bit of it that ought to be heard about the crisis and what it did to the Fed.
Do you think the Fed actually, and this is the last Fed question I'll ask because you and I could do this all day, but do you think there's still institutionally, as it were, because the people have changed, a little bit scarred by the crisis?
They're scarring from the financial crisis, yes, but they're scarring, bigger scarring, from the inflation of the 1970s.
Huh.
And I think that is persuading us more than anything else and why we're so biased towards, you know, we say that we have a symmetric view of inflation. We don't mind if it's 2.1 or 1.9, right. But in our practice, in what we actually do, we are much more worried about high inflation than we are low inflation. And I think that is a scar from the 1970s.
It's interesting. It's monetary policy by fear, basically.
You know, policymakers are human, and each has their own set of emotions and their own histories, and we do our best with the data that we have and the experiences that we've had.
For those not old enough to remember that inflation crisis of the late 1970s, it was bad. By 1980, inflation hit 14% in this economy. Today, just by comparison, it's 2%, which I mentioned as a way to get to this. You know who worries about inflation and interest rates besides the Fed? Presidents. That's who. I talked to Jimmy Carter about 8 years or so ago. He had a book out, and we touched on a couple of times during that interview, about the person he had picked in the late 1970s to chair the Federal Reserve, a guy by the name of Paul Volcker. On the topic of Paul Volcker, if I could just back up for a second.
Yeah, please.
You put him in the job. Yes. You, in essence, made this deal with him where he would do what he had to do and you would suffer the political consequences, according to your telling of it. And yet, it seems to me that he is most remembered and the president he is most associated with is Ronald Reagan for breaking the back of inflation. Does that gall you at all?
Not gall me, but you know, I recognize
it. Bug you
fact.
A little bit?
Well, you know, I was the one that suffered politically, and Ronald Reagan was the one that benefited from the Paul Volcker economic philosophy. But I don't begrudge the fact that it happened during the next term. I thought the next term was going to be mine.
30 years later, he still remembers, right? If you're a youngin' and not old enough to remember inflation at 14%, allow me to introduce you to Marketplace.org. We've got five things you need to know about inflation and the 1970s in this economy. Also there, by the way, the full transcript of me and Neil Kashkari.